I got a lovely message from Chris this morning saying, could you introduce Alice? So I'd love to do that. So for those of you that don't know, this is Alice. I love it. It's all these little bits of Christianese we have. Will you introduce somebody? So I think what we'll do is we will pray, blessing you, Alice, for what you're about to tell us. Father, I thank you for Alice. I thank you for Chris and Alice. Lord, just bless Chris where he's in the States. God, I pray that this will be an exciting time for him. But Lord, for us here, I pray that you would, you just use Alice to give us what it is you've given her. Amen.
Thanks, Rob. This is Rob. I've progressed to now trying to find John. Isn't that the right one? That one? So initially I would just point to the screen as if something magic would happen. And then it was like, John, he's like, it's not me. I'm not magic. It's the laptop. That's right. Anyway, this is brilliant. It's like I talked a bit about this last week. This is the best present I've ever seen anyone give anyone. Chris's aunt gave his brother, so her dad, on his 60th birthday, a model of a dodo with a tagline saying, adapt or die. Isn't that just like the best present? Only brothers and sisters. I was thinking some marriages could handle that. Probably not. So you couldn't do it if you're going out with someone, could you? That would... really only siblings. I was like, parent, child, So brother, sister, adapt or die when you're 60. What's amazing about that is there is kind of some truth in it, isn't there? Personally, socially, institutionally, and so on. We're created to be living and moving. There's just movement in the world. The world is an organic place, and we don't adapt. We die. We stagnate. And it's hard to glance, if you go into any shop and find the list of TED Talks or anything like, I'm sorry, the self-help books or watch TED Talks or anything like that, it's hard to not get something about how you overcome fear, how you thrive, how you deal with your stuff. That's just like across the board, this kind of sense of we've got to move on, we've got to grow. And I think this is part of the human condition. Am I pressing the wrong thing? Should I press that one? Oh, yeah. He hasn't got the magic thing. Sorry? Wave at John? What were you saying? Wave at who? I just, you know. Oh my gosh, I need to go on a course on listening, don't I? It's like, yep, I'm there. Yes, brilliant, great example. Multi-million-pound bestseller, Susan Jeffers, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And, you know, you all kind of, we have our phobias and we have to sort of overcome in order to live. And if we get stuck in them, then we eventually die. And that kind of is a general truth. I think I'm going to wave now. And then there's this quite inspiring TED Talk by a guy called Tim Ferriss, who says, why you should define your fears instead of your goals, which is quite interesting. And he has this... sort of quite a courageous story of a bipolar diagnosis and like 30 episodes of depressive episodes, which is a lot, and suicidal at university and so on. So he had to kind of face whether he was going to live or die, really. And so he goes on this big journey with that. And he's quite sort of analytical and statistical, really, and sort of quantifies everything in his life. And one of the things he does is he starts looking very practically at the cost of inaction, of not doing things, of not overcoming your fear. And literally sort of like writing lists in 6 months, in 1 year, in 3 years, in every area of your life. And I think he identifies something as well, which is really critical. It's not only that we need to overcome, but actually if we don't, something happens to us. And these guys aren't believers. He's sort of finding his path through something called Stoicism, which is a kind of ancient Greek philosophy. I personally think, and we'll come into that in a minute, there's the limitations in this belief is it's still operating out of disconnectedness. It's still trying to make my way in the world. And fundamentally, I don't really know I'm loved. That kind of orphan spirit is still there, and it's incredibly courageous, and I'm in immense respect for anyone who can do that. But this still, I'm going to find the adventure on my own, in my own way. And so we're, as humans, we're all wired for adventure. We're wired to be alive. And if you watch a child grow, it's this bizarre combination of, people say the days are short, the days are long and the years are short. You just sort of see them grow up and they're changing and the seasons change and so on. And then I think we hit an age, like maybe in our 30s or 40s, where we maybe get a bit scared or we're not forced so much to change and stagnate. And this is the critical moment. The stagnation can kick in. We can either stagnate and basically want the next generation to be good people, not really followers of Jesus, whether they're our children or other people's children, because that's very, very risky. We just want them to be kind of civilized and have a decent life, be able to settle down, maybe sustain a job and so on. And so what I'm addressing really is this moment that we have critically in our own lives, continually, I think, after we probably in our 20s have it, but after that, and also in those big milestone moments. So the micro level of every decision, every conversation, every thought, to the macro level of how we're going to do our life for the long haul and what kind of account we're going to bring at the end. So I'm going to talk about this mega church in America. It's led by a couple of pastors. All that means is it has a membership of over 2,000, I think. And that's what that definition comes from. Anyway, because of this, they had this massive, massive amount of money. They had great goals and they were going for like hundreds of thousands of pounds in their budgets. And suddenly they just hit this kind of wall. They were just losing tens of thousands of pounds. They had to lay people off. It was just this excruciating moment in their journey. And they hit this crisis. So they set out some time as a staff to fast and pray and to hear God. What was he saying? And this guy called Steve, who was part of the leadership, but he was an IT specialist. So in his own role, and he volunteered in the church as part of what he gave. And he just had this sense, we've got to expand our vision. And they were all like, wow, we didn't expect you to say that. And they talked about the 67% of the world who are far from God and the 20% who live on less than $10 a day, I think it is, at that time. But the 20% who are in extreme poverty, we've got to expand our vision. We're going to have a big giving weekend. And they're hemorrhaging. They're like cutting off people. Their money's going. But we're going to have a big giving weekend to some projects which support that, four projects which support those two visions. The people who are far from God, so church planting movements, and people in critical poverty. That weekend, they got the church together and they raised $250,000. They raised $250,000. The next year, it was more, it grew. And he was like, on the one hand, the pastor was like, wow, that's amazing, we're so generous. Then on the other hand, he's like, we're hemorrhaging, how are we going to survive? But they did. They actually kind of broke through into a new level of missional and generosity activity as a church. Waving. And this is just a little quote from what he wrote, Dave Ferguson, who is the pastor of this church. And the church is called Community. If Community had not gone through a paradigm shift that expanded our vision to include the 67% and the 20% outside the walls, the missed opportunity could have been the first of a series of organizational heart attacks leading to complete cardiac arrest. It seemed risky. It sounded crazy to give away the entire weekend's offering when there was no human way we could afford it. But looking back on it now, it was the least risky course. We had to listen to the Spirit's promptings. It was innovate or die. It's a bit nicer than adapt or die, but it's basically saying the same thing, isn't it? And he's absolutely right. We live in a God who's moving. He says, follow me, because he's going somewhere. There's movement. And we have to be continually attentive to his voice saying, what's the next step? So we're in this series. We want to immerse ourselves in a mindset of living by faith. That, and the teaching series will work with that. But generally, everything we do, we want it to be. We're hearing from God and we're doing what he's designed us to do. And there's a there's what are they called? Things that are stapled together in a pamphlet, booklet. Booklet. Thanks, Hannah. There are booklets. It's just that have that I don't think have been handed out actually, but that's probably my fault. So there we go. Oh, nice. That's great. So there's been one being waved. Brilliant. There are booklets, and there are books to read, movies to watch, places to visit to continually inspire us on what it is to live by faith. So we've got lots of opportunity to meditate on it and really come away. Either we already know what our faith is, what the good works of faith God has created for us to do. We just know it, and we're just in a series where this will help and encourage and support us in that. Or some of us go, I don't know, but I want to know. And some of us go, I didn't even know this was possible. Yes, it is from today. It doesn't matter what tomorrow, yesterday or the last season was like. From today, there's a good work of faith. We can just move into that. So, sorry, I didn't ask you, Duncan. Would you be able to do the just read? It's on the PowerPoint and down here. Thank you. This is from Genesis.
The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. Sarai was childless because she was not able to conceive. You could have given me one with easier names, honestly. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and the daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram. And together they set out for Ur on the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah died in Haran. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went as the Lord told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for Canaan, and they arrived there. Oh, there's more. Finak. Oh, he's Abraham now. Right, the Lord took Abraham outside and said, look up at the stars and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, "You shall be so shall be your offspring." Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am God Almighty. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. As for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Call her, her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and surely give you a son by her. I will bless her that she will be a mother of all nations. Kings of people will come from her."
Yeah, that's the end. Actually, you notice quite a good point there. So Abram and Sarai were their original names, and they'd get changed to Abraham and Sarah, and that's the breath of God being put into their names. It's good, isn't it? I like stuff like that. Anyway, so the next slide. So Chris talked about this last week with Noah, and I'm going to press into it again with Abraham, because it's really quite hard to beat this. This is basically what the life of faith is marked by. And we see that we looked last week at Noah, but this week at Abraham. And we're going to give some other examples as well. So firstly, this sounds, I don't know what it sounds, obvious or crazy, but the first thing is we hear God's voice. That is a fundamentally opposed concept. It's opposed on the one hand because you're crazy, you're hearing voices, and on the other hand because would he speak to you, would he speak to me? But that is the critical, critical beginning of a life of faith. We hear him. Abraham clearly heard. He didn't just think, oh, I think I like going and finding my promised land. Oh, I think it's over there. One day God just broke in. Instead, there's debate over whether Terah, his father, had actually had something, but he only got as far as Haran and settled and died, and then it went on to Abraham. It's not clear there. That is my own, just sometimes I wonder. But Abraham, we hear that he clearly heard from God, and he went, and that was the breakthrough. He heard, and he went. When I talked earlier about that mega church, they prayed and fasted. They didn't try and work out how to deal with this massive problem of all the money and whatever. They just literally said, we're going to hear God's voice. And when we've heard his voice, we'll do what he says. There's a simplicity and a purity to that. But also it's breaking that orphan spirit of having to work it out on our own. It's breaking the disconnectedness. We are deeply, deeply connected and reconnected. And it doesn't even matter if we think we don't even believe in Jesus. We just believe in him and we're connected. And it doesn't really matter if we felt unconnected for a while. We're just connected. Because he's for us, not against us. That's all we have to do is just go, yeah, I'm there. I want to hear you. I need to hear you. Let's move on. And so it wasn't the paid pastor. It wasn't this or that who heard. It was this guy, Steve, who was an IT specialist. It says, Steve. He was the one who said, expand the vision. They were like, okay, God's spoken. Let's do it. And they just had massive, massive breakthrough and change and continue to grow. We've felt for many years, Chris and I, that we've been called into this area. This area is the equivalent, for want of a better expression, of Canaan, or our promised land for us, this community, Hope Chapel, and this area. And we're just so grateful and privileged to be given a good work of faith to do. And so when I want to just tell a bit of the testimony of our housing, because it's relatively recent. I'm a great believer in really fresh testimony, and Chris and I both feel we're in good works of faith. So I do feel I'm freshly living it now, but they're kind of not yet kind of appropriate to talk about, if that makes sense. So I'll just talk about something that's fairly recent, like in the last year or two. So we had a flat on Cornwallis Crescent, which was really near, and we've basically lived in this area within walking distance for about 15 years. And but we were growing out of this flat. It was a two-bedroom basement flat. And we had two children. And we just kind of felt, it was right to expand, that actually we needed to have a bigger place. We didn't need to, but that was the time. So we asked God. And that year, a friend of many of ours here called Michelle White, who's a doctor at the BRI at the time, she had bought an amazing story as well. She bought a house just on Granby Hill, and she felt, we started praying for somewhere to live in May, and in August she felt God say to leave her job and go and to Mercy Ship. So she's a consultant anaesthetist. And so she completely stopped her income and started to live by support and live by faith in a more obvious way. I think we're all called to live by faith, whether we've got an income or not. But live in a more obvious way. She lost her kind of seen income and raised her own support and faith. But felt during that time that she'd like to, she didn't know we were praying for a house at all. We'd not talked about it. We'd only asked God. And she just said, I'd love to give you my house at a non-commercial rate for as long as I'm in Africa on the Mercy Ships. And that was just incredible. So we basically expanded. We're about double our space at least, but for the same amount of income of expenditure. It was just like God, that's God's maths. He just does stuff. He expands and expands capacity and expands provision as we need it. And so what I'm trying to do is a testimony of not just my story but hers, because she is a normal person she's a pretty extraordinary person in an extraordinary job. If anyone knows her, she once put her CV in the recycling. So obviously we had a rifle through, as you do. And we were like, oh my gosh, I can't even understand any of the words on this CV. I have no idea what you do, Michelle, but I think you save a lot of lives. Brilliant. Anyway. So she went to Mercy Ships for 5 years and we were really blessed. And our children then, they all now go to the local school, because we were really living locally, and went in Jemima's year. You couldn't get in unless you were like 50 meters away or something. It was incredible. So we really were able to get stuck into the local community and so on. Anyway, then 5 years on, she wants, she, this is, so I really want you to hear her journey almost more than ours. So she felt God say, go back, get your clinical experience back in London. And because she's going to be used in extraordinary ways and she needs to recover clinical experience. She's had a lot of practice, but not in the UK. So she, as you do, she just walks into a consultant, whatever she is, anaesthetist, pediatric anaesthetist in Great Ormond Street. She's like, what rocks up, has a chat with some guy in Starbucks and's like, gets the job. Brilliant. And all her colleagues at the BRI saw her there, give up everything, then go back up there. And she herself said, I never would have gone there if I hadn't gone there first. Absolutely extraordinary story. But as a result, she wanted to sell her house and buy in London. So we just know this is where we're designed to be. We can go back to our flat, we can go anywhere, but we need to be in walking distance. We're just like, this is where we're at, this is our calling. So we asked the Lord and just kind of left it with him. And then Chris heard, seek first my kingdom and everything will be provided for you. On Sunday, you don't need to pray anymore, it's done. And then on Tuesday, I've just got a phone call from someone in my family, completely out of the blue, unrelated, not fair in terms of anyone else, and phoned up and just said, we'd love to give you £200,000 you can sell your flat and buy the house. And then that triggered miracle after miracle. The next week, people in our flat didn't know any of this, just decided to hand in their notice. The next week, some people heard about it, wanted to buy it. We sold them. We sold our flat over FaceTime when we're on holiday, as if we were like playing Monopoly. And it was brilliant. It was all smooth, the whole thing. And we were able to move in. And that was our journey. At the same time, Michelle had an extraordinary house journey herself in London, where God provided a lovely house for her with all that, with her connection into it. But you know how buying is so hard now, especially buying in London, and she's got like house on the Thames in Fulham near where she works and near where her community is. So just amazing story. And don't forget, she is not a paid professional. She is not someone who is in church being paid to do stuff. She is a normal person hearing God and following him in dynamic ways. And one of my favorite stories with her is Freddie went through this phase of, he's my son, he's our son, he was about four at the time, and he went through a phase of asking everyone what their destiny was. He was like, what's your destiny? And they're like, what's your destiny? He's like, my destiny is to be a Scottish bagpiper. Yeah. He's actually moved on. He now wants to play American football. I'm like, oh my God. At least Scotland was like a little flight away. America, if we're going to support that vision, that's pretty big. Anyway, so I've been up. Duncan says apparently they play American football in the UK. Who knew? And Duncan's played in Wembley. Ooh. Yeah. Anyway, so the best conversation I've ever heard between a child and adult went like this. Freddie's like, Michelle, what's your destiny? And Michelle's like, I'm going to make, literally she said it like this, she just knows what her destiny is, I'm going to make surgery safer in Africa. I was like, yeah. This is all split second. I was like, yeah, you will. I know you will. What's your destiny, Freddie? I'm going to be a Scottish bagpiper. That was it. It was just brilliant. So firstly, she heard, Michelle heard, we heard, we're all hearing God's voice, we're all working together, and life works when we hear him. Secondly, vulnerability. You can't get out of that. There's a position of weakness which we're required to be in because it requires trust. It is never going to be a comfortable, happy place stepping out of a boat and walking on water. It's always going to be a place of desperation, fear, and absolute exhilaration and adrenaline, because there is no other way to hear his voice and follow him. We are in a context of a realm of flesh. Like, people operate in the logic of the flesh. I'm a chemical accident. I live about 70 years. I've got to get my happiness and pleasure, which is pretty much a dopamine fix, every so often, and then I'm going to die. That's the realm of the flesh. We are operating in a totally different realm, which looks completely foreign to that. And it's the realm of faith. Of course, it's substantial. There's a total constant reward. We don't need to rely on dopamine. We can just enjoy him, and it lasts forever, and it's substantial, and it actually can overcome and release that temporal realm of faith, of flesh. So we are going to be in a position of weakness until we're vindicated, and that's how it works. Jesus was, he was in a position of weakness, then he was vindicated, and we will be. We'll hear his voice. Noah was, Abraham was, and the vindication may take days, weeks, months, years, generations, And we love the prophets in the past, don't we? We love people like William Wilberforce. We love these people who did these incredible things. But when they were doing it, in the context of the relationships between America, France, and UK at the time of the abolitionist movement, he was seen as a traitor because he wasn't supporting whatever the politics were. It wasn't anything to do with the slave trade. He wasn't supporting the politics between France, UK, and America. And he was despised at times. We decorate the tomb of the righteous. But at the time, we have to walk through that position of weakness. So what was Abraham's vulnerability? He was told he was going to be a father and he couldn't conceive. And his wife couldn't. That is pretty intense. That is not a shallow thing. That is a deep thing. So that, he was 75 years old when he was called and 100 years old when it was fulfilled. So he didn't even hear his calling till 75. That's vulnerable. And then he had to walk for 25 years in an unfulfilled promise. Then there were a whole load of other things. He was in sophisticated cities. They were building cities at the time. Civilization was emerging, and there he was. He was wealthy, and he was doing well, and he was called to a rural tent-dwelling existence. Would have been so low. He had an old family, and he was called to be a father to a new family. He everything known and familiar to him, he had to leave behind and go to what was unknown and unfamiliar. He was a moon worshipper like those in his context, and suddenly he encountered Yahweh, the Lord of heaven and earth, the one who created the moon, and he called him right out of a whole way of life, because who and what you worship defines everything about you. We know what people really believe by how they live. And so he would have had to leave his whole way of life because he stopped being a moon worshipper and started worshipping Yahweh. Paul says it himself, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. He probably single-handedly, after Jesus, changed the world more than anyone else who ever lived. And he operated in that place of vulnerability all the time. He was relentlessly opposed. And even now, he's relentlessly misunderstood. And the example with the mega church I spoke of is a massive financial weakness. Massive weakness. They made a decision to give. They were hemorrhaging, as I've said. They were giving. They were losing money. They were losing people. And they were like, we're going to give. We're going to keep taking territory. There's the kingdom to come. There are people who don't yet know God. And there are the poor and the vulnerable who need help. We're just going to keep doing that thing because God's told us to. So in their weakness, God spoke and they operated. Michelle was incredibly vulnerable what she did. She laid down a career, basically, and an income, and safety and security, and a nice life in a nice part of the world. And that isn't it, really, because I think it's not so much about your context, but about your vulnerability. Does that make sense? So for some people, it's really self-protecting to be on missions because they don't have to face what it's like to live in a context of challenge, maybe in the West. You know, so it's not about where we live. It's about what feels vulnerable. And for her, that's massively vulnerable. She had a safe, secure job, set up for life, could travel around the world, do all the things she loved doing, and she gave it all up to live in a cabin and share it with other people. And then she had extraordinary breakthrough there in her own life, but also, obviously, God broke through for her. And then this is really important to get this, really, really important to get this third point, because otherwise it becomes almost the worst element of the prosperity gospel, which is kind of like still stuck in that self-focus, still about me, still believing the lie that if good things happen for me, I'll be happy. It's just, he prospers us, but the reward is him. If we still care about the things he's prospering us in, we're still into that. And we've bought into the lie still that that is the thing, it's him. It's him, it's knowing him, it's intimacy, it's reconnection. And so a really key area is that we are marked, our lives are marked by kingdom blessing. And again, that might come immediately, it might take time to come. But Noah's obedience brought blessing to the nations. And Abraham's, well, we all can actually, we can all track back our faith to his act of obedience. Through Abraham, many, many things happened, but one of them was that Jesus was born. He was a human, born into a human inheritance and a human lineage. And Abraham was his ancestor. And through Jesus, the whole world has been changed and being turned upside down and being just blessed and shown God's love and healed and restored and being reconciled all the time. And that mega church example, just blessing broke out to so many people who genuinely needed it and so many places that needed church planting. And I have no doubt about, with Michelle's story, that the blessing that has already broken out for her in her story and her journey with Mercy Ships, they had, you know, because of what we can do immediately at birth, there are people who live their whole lives with growths the size of their face next to them, and she could just come and be part of taking that off and restoring a life in just a bit of surgery. Just extraordinary blessing through that ministry. But I think that's just the taste with what she's bringing. I literally think she will bring safer surgery to Africa. I do. I know, Chris is brilliant at saying, don't say it unless it is, but I can see her doing that. I can see her being, someone's got to be called to do these things. It's going to be her. The thing that we itch for and ache for and desire for, maybe it's you, not someone else. Maybe you're the one who's saying, I'm going to make the change in that area. Sometimes we're like, why can't someone do something about that? Maybe it's us. Maybe it's me. Maybe the fact I care is that thing, and she cares. She's like, that is so unnecessary how unsafe surgery is. We know how to make surgery safer. And she's the one of a group of people who will do that. Let's just go to the last one. And this is Paul writing to believers in a city called Corinth. We live by faith and not by sight. Just we can dine out on that for a long time, can't we? That one phrase. We live by faith and not by sight. From now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Who did he give it to? It wasn't Paul. He gave it to us. He gave it to believers. He gave it to all of us. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We're the ones representing heaven on earth. We're the ones who represent Christ well. We're the ones who people, when they meet us, they go, that's what God's like. It's not anyone else. It's not the church over there or those people paid over there or the institution over there. It's me. When people meet me, they have a thought process about what God is like, because that's the DNA of the church. We're ambassadors. And the root Greek word of that of ambassador is only used once, is presbyo, which we normally translate linked with Presbyterian and presbyter as leader or elder. Effectively, he's saying we're all leaders. He's making his appeal through all of us. There are no superheroes here. We all have some good works which he's created in advance for us to do. It's probably the thing we're the most connected with emotionally. He's probably using our natural passions and desires. And we can do it in a way no one else can or will. So there's a work of faith for us to do. And that involves hearing his voice. Just hear his voice. And we can do that whenever we like. We can just take some time out and hear his voice. We can hear him now. There's free, complete, 100% access. We can approach with boldness the throne of grace to get grace and mercy in our time of need. We don't have to be a good person. That's the good news. We just have to be available and just want to say yes. We just have to come and hear his voice. And then secondly, prepare for that vulnerability and that position of weakness, of not being understood, of trusting his vindication at the right time, if ever in our lifetime. And then thirdly, seeing kingdom blessing break out wherever we go and wherever we take that step. We really, really value hearing God's voice, particularly in worship here. And so if anyone had a sense of what they felt God was saying to the community today, please come and say and let me know. I had a sense, and Sarah did too. Mine was of green pastures, and I felt God say that actually for some people, the work of faith for them is just to be laid down, it's Psalm 23, in green pastures and allow the Lord to restore your soul. And you are so welcome here. If that is where you're at, you are so welcome here to come and just lie down and get restored, because he loves to do that. And in fact, we can only minister out of restoration. If we haven't really experienced it, we don't really know how to bring it. So feel full permission, if that is you, to do that. And then secondly, Sarah had this sense that we come to him as grown-ups with our sort of burdens and our things that we do, we don't do, we feel we're doing or not doing. And he just loves us. He's just so pleased with us. He has such compassion on us. He just loves being with us and loves our worship. So to just really soak and immerse in that. So we've got, this is a season we're moving into. I'm going to pray now that we continue to hear his voice, know his comfort and support. And when, for those of us who have children, we need to pick them up. But for anyone else, please go to the person next to you, pray it through, say, actually, this is what I feel God's to, but I am terrified. Or, I know God's calling me this, can you pray, can you prophesy, can you bring some words? Or, I literally don't know where to begin. I know this is what I'm built for, but I have no idea where to begin. Get someone next to you and pray it through. And I'm going to pray now a general end prayer, but please, don't let this go. Let this moment be a place to push in to what he has for us. God, thank you that we live by faith and not by sight. And as Abraham was 75 years old, it's never too late. It's never too late to do the work of a lifetime. In fact, for most of us, he's just probably getting going. So I pray, as we hear his voice, as we hear your voice, for people around us to support us, to get us. I pray for hearing him clearly as a membership, as a community here, on any bigger projects and bigger territory he wants us to take as a body and part of the region, part of Bristol and the Southwest. We just are in it. We're yes. We messed up yesterday, but today we come to that throne of grace and we ask for mercy and grace to help us in our time of need, that we can get back up and do the thing we were born to do. Bless us in this, Lord. Forge it in us. May we all have that courage and vision to step out of the boat and walk on water towards you, Jesus. Amen.